How y'all doing? It's Tuesday. It's 8 a.m. That means, well, let's see. We get to have another conversation with a cool person. And I got a good one for you. We're at our Virginia Motorsports Park at the XDA Racing Series. And I got a guy to sit down with me. And I am thrilled beyond measure. Brock Davison. Oh my goodness, what an awesome man. He's done so much for the sport. It's insane. So today's session is brought to you by Brock's Performance. Brock'sPerformance.com, you can find him anywhere. You can find him on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, they're out there. But Brock'sPerformance.com is where you need to go when you need anything for your bike. Now, when you go on there, you've got, it's super easy to navigate. You've got your exhaust, your wheels, your tires. They break it down by the type of the bike that you need. They even got V-twin. They got that broken down. And then, of course, you can go over to accessories and you make sure you get your hats, your beanies, your shirts, your swag. They got that covered too. So Brock'sPerformance.com is the sponsor of today's session with the one and only Brock Davison. I'm not going to talk too much because I know y'all are itching to hear from this one. So let's go talk to Brock.
All right, this is JT Norton. Let's think of a new one. You don't have to keep up. You don't have to try because you're already here. But I am blessed beyond measure because I managed to get this guy to sit down for a little bit and talk to me, Brock Davison. How you doing, sir?
Good, JT. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And I'll let y'all know ahead of time, there's no way I can hold him up for a long period of time, so we'll do more conversations later on through the season as time permits. Just, I thank him for sitting down with me. Let's start with a little backstory so we have it on file. Because we know there's been a lot of firsts for you. You've done so much for this industry. It's no way to list it all. Where did you start out?
I guess it depends on your definition of start. In my mind, start means, and I have a picture that I carry in my phone, of a 1975 XR750 Honda with wheelie bars. Right?
Wow.
So my mom was more motorsports oriented. She was from Indianapolis. My dad didn't know anything about motorcycles, bikes, anything. He's a music guy. And our next door neighbor, well, he's actually directly across the street, was the city hellion. A gentleman by the name of Jack Emmons. He lives in South Florida now, but he had KZ 900 that I went to the local drag strip and watched him break into the 10s, which was a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
Back then, this was in 1977-78. He had one of the fastest bikes out there. He ended up continuing on. He raced a little Top Fuel, as a matter of fact, for a while, but to digress. So I had to have a motorcycle. I wanted to be like Jack. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, and we managed to scrounge up enough money to buy this Honda. And I would just go around the neighborhood, you know, just raising hell, being that kid, right? And he noticed me, Hellraiser. I had long hair and, you know, tie-dyed everything. And he's like, you're pretty small. They tell me you're fast on that XR. And I said, well, I guess, you know, the local kids, we'd go race. Mm-hmm. And he's like, how would you like to take my bike for a spin? I'm like, which bike? My KZ. It's actually a Z1. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah. And so I'm in sixth grade. I weighed 78 pounds.
Oh, Jesus.
I couldn't touch both feet on the ground. I could just get both of them on the pegs. So I sat on the bike. He put me in an open face helmet. He always wore an open face helmet. Mm-hmm. And held me up. And he goes, I'm going to give you a push. Once I get going, it's all you. And he gives me a push. And I start going up the street, and I'll never forget it. I can hear the sound to this day. He had a Kirker with no baffle. And, man, I twisted on the gas, and it started to accelerate. And I only knew one speed, wide open. So the next thing you know, I got this thing flying. Banging through the gears, our street was sort of short, but I got maxed out in third gear, right?
Oh, wow.
And just as I slow down with the just eyeballs, you know, as big as grapefruits, heart beating out of my chest, there's all the neighborhood kids, and they see me, because they always wanted it. And they see me and this little dude on this big old bike, and I remember thinking, this is just badass. This is great. So I go around the block, and I come back up, and I'm like, I can't stop. And he said, use the curb. So I come over, curb this thing, hop over on one leg, hold it up, and I have been absolutely eaten up with this stuff ever since.
Wow.
Love going fast. I don't like land speed. I don't like big speeds, but I really like acceleration, the way it makes you feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, you use more of your senses when you're accelerating than doing anything else. Yep. I mean, it's just such a wonderful feeling that I have chased it my entire life. Here we are now. It's wow. A little crazy.
Now, when you started racing, clearly you had the love for it right from the twist of the first throttle. When did the transition to creating parts? What was the first thing you created? Say, okay, I need something else because something's not working. What was that moment for you? If you can narrow it down to one.
But it goes back so far. You know, I would even work on the neighborhood kids' bikes to get more money to be able to buy a faster bike.
Okay.
Once I got, my dad bought me a car to help me get to high school when I was 16.
Okay.
That I promptly traded for a KZ750 triple with Denko parts. This thing was a monster. It was really fast. I mean, it was a low 11 second bike back then.
Wow.
With a 16 year old snot nosed kid on it. I didn't have the money to buy the stuff that I needed, so I would actually make, the bike handled so terribly, it just wanted to wobble and wobble and wobble. And so I made a dual steering damper kit to try to get rid of some of the head shake in my ninth grade metals class. Just fixing problems. And that's what Brock's Performance and what I'm all about.
Yeah.
I'm about fixing problems. And one of the things that I've noticed is if I can fix a problem and I can make that solution available to other motorcycle riders, they're very happy with it. And so that's really how we run our entire program now. We don't work on bikes. We don't have a retail area.
Yeah.
It's all internet, mail order, phone sales. Okay. But the things that we are selling, as an example, I'm here this weekend to finish off a 2020 BMW project bike,
okay,
working with a gentleman out of Maryland who actually bought the bike and brought it to me.
Oh, wow.
Because I told him, you know, we'll go ahead and set it up for super stock when I'm done, because that's our target market. You know, how fast can you go with all bolt-on parts? So we did, you know, our exhaust, we've got our spring filter, we had to do some chassis stuff, all kind of clutch, make the clutch work, and we just went out and David Vondon on a test pass last night ran an 861. The current record in the class he holds at an 866.
Ooh.
So for us to come out and be able to hit that hard right off the bat, every single part that is on that motorcycle will be available through Brock's Performance. All you have to do is buy them, put them together. Now, can you ride like David? No. But we can give you as much horsepower as David, and what you do with it really is that's the fun part, getting to learn how to use it.
But when you have somebody like David, and they can, when you put that on there, and somebody like him who can push it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people aren't willing to push as hard as some of the racers like Vondon, but that helps you in that development process.
Most definitely. And, you know, back when Brock's Performance originally started, I would design the parts to fix my team. Mm-hmm. I would ride the bike. I would know if the parts are working or not. And one of the struggles for me now, look at me, I'm a fat old businessman, right? So I can't exactly jump on a super stock bike and get the kind of data that I used to be able to get. And that's why we work with really good guys. You know, Jeremy Teasley, he's fantastic to work with. David, I had no idea. Now here's a guy that barely speaks English, but he can come back from a run and tell me, you know, I just take a little clutch pressure out. When the clutch began to engage, it was a little hard for me to deal with the engagement point. So I think if you take shims off of three springs, I'll be able to get through that sooner. Also, step your seat and take one tooth off the rear sprocket. I'm going to go ride something else. Let me know when it's ready.
What's ironic is you're the second person to say that. Willie Nichols, when I was with Larry McBride and Gary, Willie said the same thing about him, that he says it's eerily bizarre how he has that ability.
It's one of the things that, so you've got racers and you've got riders, right? Mm-hmm. Riders ride well, they go fast, they go quick. Racers race well, they win races. Mm-hmm. To find people that can ride well and race well is extremely rare.
Yeah.
Then you get to the other part where most riders slash racers, and I'm just gonna throw a couple names out there. Mm-hmm. Let's say Keith Dennis, Ricky Gadsden, I've worked with these guys. They are so good at riding that instead of letting me know what the potential problem might be, they'll ride around it.
Okay.
Which is great, because like Ricky won we won two championships with Ricky riding without problems that if I'd have fixed, it probably would have been so difficult.
Yeah.
And of course, Ricky's gotten much, much better. This was, 2008, 10. So to have someone with mechanical aptitude that can ride, that can race, that can tell me how to set up the bike to make it easier for him to do both, mm-hmm. is really, really, really wonderful. And that's why we're here. So that data,
yeah.
You know, I can sell you all the parts, but if you don't have any idea what to do with them, what good does it do anybody? Yeah. You have a fast bike, but you're not putting up any numbers. Well, now, you know, what kind of gearing? Mm-hmm. What's your clutch setup? What launch RPM? What shift RPM? What does it take to go out and set records like David is doing?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. That data will not go away. We will store it, and it'll be available for our sales team as well as our fellow racers to access anytime they want.
And the quick insert, Brock's Performance. LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, you're everywhere.
Everywhere.
Easy to find. If you're in motorcycle drag racing and you don't know how to find them, you need to get medical attention.
You can type in Block Performance, Brook Performance, Brooks, and we come up everywhere. So we've got a lot of presence out in the internet, and our international following is really, really growing also. And you know, having David from Puerto Rico is just one of those really, how much better can this be?
Yeah.
Puerto Rico is one of our, that's one of our heavy areas that purchase a lot of products, so.
Well, it's interesting too, because from my standpoint, from the, media support role, it's interesting too with that Latino and Puerto Rican market, the fierce loyalty.
Oh my God.
The fan base there, oh my goodness, because I mean, like with Pablo Gonzalez and stuff, David, it just amazes me the grasps they grab on to the people, and they support them like crazy.
Oh yeah,
and so much talent coming out of there too.
It really a lot of fast guys, and it's funny. Christopher, and I don't want to butcher his last name, Gutierrez, I believe.
Okay,
who I had never met, but I have emailed, messaged back and forth with this gentleman for the better part of 20 years on how to make motorcycles go fast.
Wow.
And he's here on David's team this weekend, so it's really
cool.
And ironically enough, the story just keeps getting weirder. David's father owned a motorcycle dealership.
Okay.
Where Christopher worked. So Christopher built all the fast stuff for them,
mm-hmm.
and then David doesn't have the dealership anymore. But they've remained close, and Christopher does their work. So,
oh wow.
And those guys, you head over there. You want to outrun the best of the best. That's what we got. David's showing it here.
Yeah. I think you can put him on a toaster, and he probably wins. The man's just, and he's such a what. What I like is that he comes off very wiry, very mm-hmm. energetic. And then as soon as he hits up in this water box, he's like a little concrete, for lack of a better description, a concrete doll. Because I pay attention to how y'all set up when you're on the bikes. And he just, it's like somebody turned on a laser beam.
When he goes to work, I've noticed he gets very serious. And his situational awareness is phenomenal. You know, a lot of these guys out here, they're, And I was sort of this way. My brain didn't really start to function until I hit second. It was, you know, it's sort of, it's just sort of muscle memory. You do it, you do it, you do it. Man, David knows every bump in the track. He knows exactly what happened. He'd come back from a run. He hit, looked like it wheelied on you. Do you want me to change the gear? No, it was my fault. I gave it just a little too much. I wasn't patient enough. I'll change my riding style next time. Leave that alone. But if you could, please make this change, because I noticed this as I was going down the track also. So he's like my Puerto Rican data logger. he knows everything about the motorcycle.
Wow. Now, your own experience, you've won some championships and you had some firsts. So you're in the history books. Let's talk about a little bit of those. We want to make sure we get that on audio file too.
It's all archaic now, man. Yeah, we're talking 20 years ago. But in a nutshell, I quit my job to go racing back in 1997, 98. Warning for anyone who thinks they want to do that. When you quit your job, they stop paying you. So I had to figure out what to do, right? And I had always done my side work. I had my real job. I come from an automotive engineering background. Okay. And I worked in the automotive industry to pay my bills. And then I would do my motorcycle design, race, everything after work. So that I could, you know, the parts would keep the bike program going. A lot of people don't realize it, but back in the day, I would just send Dave Schnitz piles and piles of parts. He'd shrink wrap them. He'd market them under Schnitz, because I had an 8-to-5. I can't answer questions all day about the products, right? So we started off back then, man, Ryan was so young, crazy. But anyway, back to the 7s. I managed to get a partial sponsorship from American Suzuki. Ricky was dealing with Kawasaki, and Scott Grigalunas, RIP, was dealing with Honda at the time. Suzuki wanted to come in. They weren't having much luck finding somebody, and Skeeter Kaiser from AMA ProStar said, why don't you give Brock a try? You know, he's doing okay. He's trying real hard. And so they did. Okay. And basically that meant they gave me a couple motorcycles and a parts credit, and patted me on the back and said, let us know how your championship chasing goes. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was racing a GSXR 600, a GSXR 750, which it was a lot of fun. Nitrous oxide 750. I had a full grasp on the fact that I had no idea what I was doing, but I did it anyway, right? It's like, okay, it's a baby small tire Pro Mod bike. I used to race Pro Mod. This will be fun.
Okay.
I blew myself up on that thing. Just Google type drag racer blows off hand, and you'll notice me, and that's my hand flying off the screen when my gas tank leaves the motorcycle.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Like in a car when you have a nitrous backfire, it blows off the hood and fenders, right? On a sport bike, it blows the tank off and takes you with it. So anyway, we ran through that, went through hell with that bike, finally got it working. Concurrently, I had purchased a Bandit because I was really into Unlimited Street Bike Shootout at the time. Mm-hmm. I purchased a Bandit because a fellow racer and friend at the time, Joe Morosco, said, hey, why don't you look at one of these? I think you can get a little bit more wheelbase out of it. And I took my tape measure up to my local dealership. I'm measuring. Son of a gun, I think Joe's right. So anyway, I bought this Bandit. It was my own money. And put it together and ran it while I was doing the 600, 750, and so on. 1999 was an absolute disaster. I blew up, caught on fire. I hated that 750, man. I carried a fire extinguisher. If I told you how many times I was shooting a handheld fire extinguisher under the gas tank in the shutdown area at 160 because I caught my ass on fire again.
Good Lord.
You think I'm crazy. After the second time, the bike violently exploded. I told the guys, the safety crew, I said, listen, I'm taking the fire extinguisher off my bike. I'm going to put a pistol there. And the next time this bitch blows up, you try and put it out, we're going to have a problem. So anyway, I had some good help from John Hoover, who was running the Kawasaki team at the time.
Okay.
He said, Brock, he goes, I know what's going on. He says, we have this issue with jet skis. He said, in the jet ski world, the engine's up front, the fuel tank's in the back, so we have to move the fuel. He said, but we put them in really small cavities, mm-hmm. so there's not enough oxygen available to make the fuel go bang if you have a problem, it'll go poof instead. So
okay.
That's an interesting concept. So I got with, I also got some Yoshimura sponsorship. The president of Yoshimura, Don Sakakura, sent me a set of carburetors. He sent me a carbon fiber air box. This was my first love of carbon fiber because what was happening was the plastic air boxes, when I would backfire, they would separate and allow as much oxygen in to ignite the rest of the fuel as could fit.
Yeah.
Whereas the carbon fiber stayed together, and instead of blowing up, I had a couple backfires, but it just, because we didn't have enough oxygen, it just sort of pushed a little fire out of the front ram air tubes, then it went out and everything was fine. Wow. So anyway, I finally got that bike going, ended up winning the Superbike National Championship in 2000 against my boy Ricky Gadsden and another real strong competitor, Rob Muzzy. That dude, he was really, really serious. But they had their, you know, two transporters, you know, one from Oregon, the other one from the hospitality, that would show up at the races, and I got an all-volunteer crew that's flying in on the red eye to try and help me beat these guys, you know, working out of my garage basically by myself. And we managed to pull that off, and then we also managed to run in May of 2000, we managed to run the first 7-second, Foley Street legal motorcycle pass. And what that meant was street tire, no wheelie bars. The bike had to be self-starting. And in those days, we would do a 25-mile road course. Indianapolis was the preferred place to go. They would put us out there. So we had the unlimited class, the modified class, and the short wheelbase stock class. They put 120 of us all out on a road race course on drag bikes.
Holy crap.
You know what happens there, right? Yeah. I mean, it's absolute chaos because the road racing course at Indianapolis incorporates the starting line, runs all the way to the quarter, all the way, keeps going, and wraps around and loops around. And our first lap, I was riding next to my buddy Dick Speed from Chicago, and we pull up on the straightaway, and let's go. We're racing, right? So we crossed the finish line, and I'm thinking, why are we still in the gas past the finish line? Because we had a lot further we could go, right?
Yeah.
Well, these bikes had sidewinders on them, right? Nitrous oxide, big motors. And I'm thinking, that's a really nasty-looking right-hand curve coming up here. This may be tough. So I got on the brakes a little sooner than the Dick did. He goes into the right-hand corner. Next thing you know, I can't see. It's like I'm behind a comet. There are so many sparks coming off his exhaust. I couldn't tell where the edge of the track was, where the grass began, where the guardrails were. And all I could do was lean in and drag in behind him,
God.
And, man, those were some really, really, really fun times. We had a ball with that stuff. And at the end of your 25 miles, your bike had to be self-starting. They checked your electrical system to make sure you didn't disable anything with a multimeter.
Okay.
And if your bike didn't start, that was your one and only opportunity to race for the year. You had to wait a full year.
Holy crap.
So anyway, I managed to pull off the first seven there. We had some of the best in the business, man. Kent Stotts, Keith Dennis, Ricky Gatz, and Chris Williams. I mean, some of the best riders out there, and we managed to use, and back to what we were talking about, David.
Mm-hmm.
I was never the best racer. I found ways to lose in the final more than anybody. I was a good rider. I could get down the track, but more importantly, I had so many laps under my belt that I understood what was going on with the motorcycle and what needed to change on the bike so that my no-riding ass could get it down the track in front of these superstars. So that's really what started Brock's performance.
Oh my God, that's
awesome. As soon as I ran in the sevens, my phone started ringing off the hook. You know, what do you make for my bike? Nothing. But what do you want? I can do anything. I really felt that. I mean, I made all the parts for the 750, ignition, clutch, new different pistons, just everything for that bike. And the Hayabusa had just come out. I was working with Suzuki at the time. They managed to get me a crashed media Hayabusa so that I could start working on products.
Yeah.
And I also met a gentleman by the name of Lang Hendel from Canada. Hindle exhaust systems. Lang is, that dude is salt of the earth. He is that coolest guy. He and I immediately hit it off, and he's in the road race exhaust business, right? He said, Brock, he said, if you were going to change an exhaust to make it better for drag racing, what would you do? And I'm like, oh, I'd do this, and this, and this, this, this. He goes, why don't you come up to Canada and we'll make one? Far effing out. That's why I do that. So I went up there. It was winter time at the time before he had enough time, and then I could get up there. Froze my butt off for about 10 days, but came up with our first generation Hayabusa exhaust. And I had I bought an Acro, I bought a Muzzy. If it was supposed to be the badass exhaust at the time, I bought it.
Okay.
And I headed straight to our dyno. A friend of mine had a dyno that we could test on. I didn't own one, didn't have any money. But I'd go to the racetrack, and I would do one of the things that the automotive industry taught me is, you know, sort of the Six Sigma type testing. Everything has to be very, very well controlled. You don't randomly take input. You have to follow a structure. Okay. And if I follow the same structure of tuning, modifications, etc., with our exhaust that I did with the Acro and let's say the Muzzy, not only did we make about 5 horsepower more on the dyno, but we made about 2.5-3 mph more speed on the drag strip. So this is a dynamic application, wow, which is the dyno versus the dyno's a static. Dynamic application where we know that the Hayabusa has ram air, so I told him, I'm like, make this exhaust bigger than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. So when we were picking tubing sizes, I'd like to tell you we got on the latest, greatest engineering probe. No, we got up there, we started picking tubing. Okay, will that fit under the fairing? Yep, we'll have to squeeze it, but it'll fit. So we made everything oversized. Okay. Well, if you had a stock airbox, we all ran the same. But I came up with an airbox modification that when you modified the airbox, now we are 2.5-3 mph faster than them, apples to apples, which is the dynamic equivalent of about 12 more horsepower.
Wow.
So I'm going, all right, so let's sell it with this kit. But here's your exhaust. Here's a Power Commander map that matches our airbox mod.
Okay.
And, you know, aftermarket filter. Put it all together and go fast. And, man, it has been just like that, and a whirlwind ever since.
Now, with this new, obviously because of how Brock Performance worked, the new Super Stock class.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful for us.
I mean, it's got to be. I mean, it's obviously, what I love is the passion for it, because obviously HTP, they're covering that, but Jason is a huge fan of it too. And, I mean, it's taken off, and the talent that's out here is unbelievable.
This reminds me of the first 600 Super Sport class, where guys like this Zachary Applegate, I got to meet him last weekend. All right, the kid's small. I don't care how small you are. If you can't ride, you cannot run 870s on one of these bikes. So this is where the guys come out. They sort of test their steel, I guess you'd say. And some of the best riders in the pro classes started in either 600 Super Sport or 1000 Super Sport, which has now transitioned into Super Stock. And I'm sure we're going to see the same thing. David Fondon will be on a pro stock motorcycle within the next couple years, right?
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and throw that out there for the world to see, because he will go and instantly give them fits if he's on a competitive bike.
That he will. So now, like I said, we can continue this conversation, but this man is way too busy.
Yeah, I really need to go.
And we ran it a little bit long, so, but we'll definitely talk to him again, and we'll make sure that my job is not to get in their way. But thank you so much, sir, for sitting down with me today. I greatly appreciate it. So, Brock's Performance, anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, there'll be linked down in the descriptions. There'll be links to get to all the XDA pages plus all Brock's Performance, so support him. He's done personally a world for the sport. He's done a lot for it, but he contributes every single day to stock motorcycles, to the people running down this track. So thank you so much, sir.
Appreciate it, JT.
All right, there we go. We heard from Brock Davison, and I am absolutely honored that he came on the podcast for me. And the man has done so much, and his company, Brock's Performance, has done so much for the sport, not just for drag racing, but just for your bike that you want to go down the street on. If you want to be stupid fast, that is a Brock's Performance registered trademark. So if you want stupid fast, you have to go to brocksperformance.com. Again, you can find them anywhere. You can find them on Twitter, you can find them on Instagram, and even on YouTube. And their website is super easy to navigate. Breakdown, you can look by brand, by part. Most of y'all guys know your motorcycles. You know what you're after. So their website is geared towards that. So clearly that's what happens when people that know motorcycles build motorcycle websites. And so brocksperformance.com. Again, today's session is brought to you by brocksperformance.com. Brock, I do get feedback from my guests when they come on because I want to get better at this like anything else. And for Brock, on future conversations, we're going to be more topic-oriented. His time is extremely valuable, so I'm not going to be able to sit him down for long periods of time because he's a super busy guy. So we're going to be topic-related for Brock on future conversations because we got the intro stuff out of the way. And then we're going to narrow in on what people want to hear from. Now, it could be something that I've always been curious about, but somebody like Brock, your feedback is extremely important as well because what do you want to hear about? Now, obviously, we're going to touch base again on Fondant and the BMW, plus any other projects he's got going on. Once again, thank you so much, Brock Davison of Brock's Performance, for coming on. Make sure y'all get over to the website. There's an accessories tab on the website, brocksperformance.com. You can get your hat, you can get your shirt, get your beanie. You even got bottle openers there. So support Brock, and they are there to support you. I do appreciate y'all for keeping up. This is JT. I'm out of here, but I shall return.